climate change, global warming. Is it all true? And if it is true, what is causing the globe to warm up?
Is it just a natural cycle? Is it caused by human activity? And what in the world does Bible science research have to do with it? We are going to go in a totally unexpected direction on today's podcast.
This is the big topic for this particular episode of the BC Messenger podcast. Thank you for joining us for this special edition of the BC Messenger. It is October 2024. This is Season 3, Episode 3 of the BC Messenger, Real Science, Real Bible, Real History, and Real World.
We are your hosts every month here, Steve and Jennifer Hall, coming to you from East Central Illinois. Thank you for joining us.
And we don't really have a bullet list today because we have one topic that we are hitting today. And we're going to get right into it here in just a moment, but we did want to mention that we have a brand new podcast website. You can go to thebcmessenger.com. It's easy.
When you get there, you will find a central hub for all of the past episodes, easy for you to search and find our past content, easy for you to communicate with us. In fact, you can even leave us a voice message on this new website, www.thebcmessenger.com. Hit the little microphone icon there in the corner. Leave us a voice message. Share thoughts with us, reactions, comments, and we might even air those comments on a future podcast.
That's right. And get that the in the address, thebcmessenger.com. It's also a link in our show notes. Always want to encourage you to go to those show notes, especially today. We have a lot of graphics, pictures in the show notes that are going to be very important for our topic today.
Very large and weighty topic today that has been on our minds for some months. We have been talking to you a little bit about it, and we're ready now to just get into it.
We are used to thinking in terms of decades because we live in decades, at least presently. Maybe we think, if we're thinking of history, in terms of centuries, but we don't typically think in terms of millennia. In this episode that we are presenting to you today, we're going to have to take a step way back and see the very big picture. Again, we aren't used to doing that. We Christians, if you're a Christian today and you're listening to this, we're not used to doing that, thinking in terms of millennia in the past or in the future.
Especially hundreds of thousands of years. We don't normally back up and look at history in that sense. But when it comes to climate change, we need to get into that kind of a mentality for what we're going to be covering today.
That's right.
And we need to start thinking about this thing called geophysics. For those of us regular lay people who don't specialize in science, geophysics is the study of the physics of the earth. And that is the direction that we're headed on today's podcast. So we got to think of hundreds of thousands of years and geophysics and how our planet actually works.
Now, last month, our topic was on discoveries that seemed delusional. I hope you go back and listen to that if you haven't listened to it already.
Discoveries that seemed way too crazy to be true at first, but ended up revolutionizing, changing even the world. So that was a great setup for today's episode because that is, in fact, the kind of thing that we're presenting here today.
You may have seen that meme that goes around social media sometimes where you've got this large group of people and they're all like gray, you know, this gray people.
Mass.
And then you've got this one red or bright yellow figure or something standing right in the middle of them looking at all the people. And the caption says, "You are all wrong."
Yeah. Well, the way I've seen the meme, it's just like this one little stick figure out front.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's different versions of it. And the little stick figure looks very small and insignificant. And he's facing this mass of humanity. And he's saying, "You are all wrong."
And it's true, like on our podcast last month, when there's new discovery, when there's, quote, new truth, that's what a person feels like when they are the one who is trying to present it. This is brand new, so no matter what camp you're in, there's going to be parts of the of a new discovery that is going to make everybody think, absolutely not. That's insane. That's crazy. And that's what's going to happen in this podcast.
Yeah, we want to warn you right at the outset that no matter what group you find yourself in, no matter who you identify with in a Christian group, in a scientific group, in a field of study somewhere, you are going to have preconceived ideas that are going to strongly protest at what is being said on this episode. It is going to happen. So just be forewarned. And again, no matter who you are, where you find yourself, this is going to happen. So we want you to remember that it's those preconceived ideas that can often block truth, that can become a roadblock
to what actually is true.
Something new truth coming on the scene.
And this is what's happened over and over throughout history. That's what we were presenting last month. And we don't want to let it happen again. We want to learn from history.
So we just request that you listen to this episode with an open mind. Listen to the whole thing. Read the article, Dr. Aardsma's research article, which was published March 21st of this year. Read the whole research article. It's 20-some pages long. Quite technical in nature, but read it. Read the whole thing. Let it be a seed planted in your mind. Don't block it out.
Right. Now, before we begin, I'd like to give a word to those in the scientific community who might be listening to this podcast, and we certainly hope you will be, at least eventually. You might be asking the question, and we've been asked this question in the past with other discoveries here, is this work peer-reviewed? Is this work peer-reviewed?
That's an understandable question. The problem that we're facing at the moment here is that this work, this Bible science research work, doesn't have any peers,
Exactly. Actually. Not yet.
You're not going to get peer-reviewed if you don't have any peers. The attitude in mainstream science and in Christian groups is, if your idea hasn't been accepted, we can't accept your idea.
Right.
Don't bring something brand new, so outside the box that we automatically will reject it.
That's human nature. We all want to have confidence in something because those that we follow, those that we trust, has confidence in it. But again, when we're talking about brand new discovery, when we're talking about brand new, again, I keep putting it in quotes, new truth, there aren't any peers yet. It's brand new, and it's coming from an independent research scientist.
As we discussed last month, we can see in history examples of work that did not have any peers when it first came on the scene, such as Galileo's work, was not peer-reviewed in the traditional sense at all because, again, it did not have any peers. It shocked everybody. But now today I'm looking at the University of Chicago Press website. They are publishing Galileo's book, Sidereus Nuncius, and it is saying that this is arguably the most dramatic scientific book ever published. So it came on the scene with no peers, and look where it is today, still being talked about and revered, you know, because it brought in a new era of scientific discovery.
So our plea today is that you will consider the ideas that are presented here for the sake of the ideas, for its own merit, that you are seeing the science here. Remember, Albert Einstein said, if at first the idea is not absurd, then there's no hope for it. It's going to appear that way. What Einstein meant was that an idea which has been proposed to move science forward into a better understanding of the real world has no hope of success if that idea does not initially seem absurd. Please don't have the attitude, we don't have to listen to you because nobody's ever said anything like this before, or it hasn't been accepted, as Jennifer was saying, therefore it can't be accepted. No, take in what we are presenting the actual science behind it. Go to Dr. Aardsma's article online. We'll have links to that in the show notes. The gatekeepers are big science, big tech, big pharma, big government, big media. We all know this, don't we? Let's not let them dictate to us real truth when it actually does come along. Now, that's a problem, right? There's a lot of junk science out there. We all get that. We understand it, and it's hard to filter through. But let me again plead with you. If you have come across this podcast, if you have come across the article, check it out and evaluate it on its own merit. Is it real science or is it not?
Yes. Don't rely on the gatekeepers of information, like Steve was just saying, to feed to you the new ideas. You need to evaluate it for yourself if you're seeing this.
That's right. All right. Well, let's jump into it today. Let's talk about where we are today when it comes to climate science.
It, of course, is everywhere. We all know that. We're not going to dwell on this particular point. It dominates politics, education, motivates new technology like electric cars, solar energy.
It's a never-ending topic.
Permeates even the message of mainstream evangelical groups. It has become a love-your-neighbor type of driven message.
We just ordered a couple of books researching for this podcast from evangelical groups that we're talking about this issue. And again, we're not taking any position like this on this podcast.
The books we ordered were Shepherds for Sale, brand new book by Megan Basham, and a brand new book by Answers in Genesis called Climate Change for Kids and Parents Too. Not endorsing either of those books in any way.
But to get an idea.
But these are brand new. I mean, this is just a hot topic. And everywhere you turn, you are seeing it popping up.
Like you said, in politics, I mean, we've got Donald Trump saying nuclear weapons are the real threat, not oceans rising a few inches. You've got a video that you showed me, Jen, the other day of a guy in a theater in New York City, I think it was, who was just started screaming in the crowd about the water is coming for us. The
globe
is
warming. It's become a gospel message of its own.
Right.
And this individual was in a theater on Broadway, and he was screaming in the middle of this production, there will be no Broadway if New York City is swallowed by water. The water is coming for us.
And he's
yelling that
he's
as
passionate.
He is being taken out of the theater. That's how passionately he feels about this topic.
So it's huge today. It seems to be a never-ending topic. It's everywhere we turn. It's permeated our society. And we today are wanting to say from the outset that this is not why we're here. This is not what we're a part of. We're not part of some kind of a fad. We're not doing this for this reason. We are going to be presenting something to you today that you have not heard before. It is having to do with cause and effect. Present global warming. Let's just state it right up front, and I don't think too many people are disagreeing with this anymore. Present global warming is a real phenomenon. The globe is warming. It's not a question of if it's happening, but the question is what's causing it.
And we're dealing with it here because brand new Bible science research is showing that what you are being told about climate change is, in fact, false. And as it turns out, it's not only false, but it is an exceedingly dangerous narrative. So, like it or not, we have an ethical obligation to talk about it here and to tell you what we now know.
So we're going to launch out. Brand new direction. Why are we talking about this? Again, no conflict of interest in regard to climate change. We're dealing with a self-published independent research scientist who did not set out to talk about climate change. This has come about through researching other areas in what we are calling Bible science research. We'll get to that in a second.
Yes, and we are not tied to any group. Dr. Aardsma, Aardsma Research and Publishing, gets funding from nowhere. No pro-climate change, anti-climate change, no political group, no evangelical group. This is being motivated simply by a desire to get the truth out there.
Dr. Gerald Aardsma presents a brand new theory of climate change, one that takes a very high view of both the science and the Bible. We learn about an unexpected but a very clear cause and effect phenomenon which results in Earth's changing climate. Now, Jennifer and I are not scientists. We never have pretended to be scientists. We are communicators, especially in this role that we have here. And we are communicating the work of Dr. Gerald Ardsma. We desperately need other real scientists who specialize in these areas to delve into this discovery, put this on the table, get around this and start to pick it apart. Try to prove it's not true. Isn't that what science does, right? You're trying to disprove this theory. Jennifer and I aren't able to do that. But what we are here today to do is to communicate it, to put it out there.
Right. Bible science.
Right. What I mentioned a minute ago, Bible science is what we are calling, what Dr. Ardsma is calling this. Do not confuse what we are saying, Bible science, with creation science or with young earth creationism. Our audience who is listening to us and has been listening, they know who we are. They know where we stand. We take a high view of both the Bible and science. And when you do that, when you take it seriously, you begin to get a picture of things that you've never had before, an understanding of both the biblical accounts and the science of our world.
You'll never get the whole story on climate change if
That's
you don't
right.
take a high view of both. I'm going to make a statement here that we have in our show notes, in the summary. The Bible is not just a spiritual book. That's how we normally think of it. That's probably how the majority of Americans would think of the Bible. A holy book, a spiritual book that can give us spiritual truth for our eternal destiny. And
it is
glory
that.
To God, it is that.
That's right.
But what it is not seen as today by any group that I know of, Christian or non-Christian group, is actually a book that contains data and history and information about our world that is exceedingly valuable. There is nowhere else where you can get detailed information about events which transpired in our world over 5,000 years ago that not only transpired 5,000 years ago, but have huge practical implications for where we are as a society today.
Right.
There are plenty of groups out there that want you to believe the Bible. There are groups that even try to tie that in with science and make a connection there, but it is always theologically driven. I'm just going to go ahead and say this. The book from Answers in Genesis, Climate Change for Kids and Parents Too, really should be called A Theology of Climate Change for Kids and Parents Too, because that is what that book is about, spiritual truths having to do with climate change. But they are not presenting the data, the information contained in Genesis as anything to do with any practical concerns today. There are other groups who don't take Genesis as literally, but they still want us to believe it. Even these Christian groups are taking a very spiritual approach. Let's not lose the spiritual benefit of these ancient texts. But Dr. Ardsma stands completely alone, as far as I know, in saying we must know this information. We must understand the implications. And that's where we've been with the longevity research for a long time. But today, something brand new is coming on the scene with it.
There is nowhere else that we can get the pieces needed to complete the modern day climate change puzzle that is in front of us, that we're looking at, that we're facing. Also, the answers, again, that we are presenting here, this Bible science perspective, it is differing sharply from what modern mainstream science is saying. You talked about the theology, but on the science side, there is serious anti-biblical prejudice that
there
has
is?
severely hindered the advancement of science. You mentioned Genesis, that it's just an immediate turnoff. If you're not peer-reviewed, as we've already mentioned, or if you're bringing up anything to do with Genesis or the flood, then it's done deal. We're not listening to you. We've got to stop it. We have to get over this prejudice and look at the data. When biblical historical data are treated fairly, then they revolutionize climate change science. That's what we are presenting to you today.
This is not going to be what you would expect to hear from a Bible-believing group about Noah's flood and climate change. We are the only ones saying this, so hang with us as we get into it here. I want to read from page 21 of the article. Here's Dr. Aardsma's words as to why he places confidence in the historical record of the Bible. The first 11 chapters of the biblical book of Genesis record a history and chronology of real-life people and events prior to 3000 BC. These chapters contain, by far, planet Earth's earliest written history. I have found this history to be reliable, holding up under rigorous cross-examination via application of scientific principles and methods. I have repeatedly found that it provides quantitatively defensible answers to otherwise seemingly intractable modern scientific problems. Now, that's what we're about here, data rich. We are about the information contained in the text, scrutinizing it scientifically, and learning what we can learn no other way about the history of our world and where we are today.
Yes. Okay. So let's now get into the meat of this and talk about Bible science research and where this has led us.
So here it is in a nutshell. Listen to Steve's statement he's going to give you here. This will begin to help you to begin to wrap your brain around what we are presenting here today as we unfold this huge new theory of climate change.
Right. Let me give you the statement, then we'll go back and unpack it some. According to the Noaic events theory of climate change, Earth's climate and climate change result predominantly from the titanic struggle between Earth's glaciers and Earth's Noaic events.
A titanic struggle. There are two opposing forces at work. Number one, the cooling down of the planet due to the natural growth of Earth's glaciers. And number two, the warming back up of the planet due to Earth's Noaic events, which melt back the glaciers.
Right.
And this is what's bringing about the fluctuations in Earth's climate that we today call climate change.
Right.
What is the struggle between again?
Noaic events and Earth's glaciers.
Earth's glaciers. What do glaciers do? Cool everything down. And what do Noaic events do? We're going to talk about it.
Right. Well, I guess we better, at this point, at least go ahead and give a brief summary of what a Noaic event actually is before we keep going.
Yes. For the sake of our listeners who've never heard of a Noaic event before, this would be a good spot to try to define that.
Right. So a Noaic event is in the category, you can think of it in the category of a natural disaster. A natural disaster such as a tornado or a hurricane or a tsunami or an earthquake, they are a type of recurring natural disaster. But they appear to be the worst recurring natural disaster which happens on Earth. That's what we're saying is a Noaic event.
All of this is according to Dr. Aardsma's theory of Noah's flood, and now this new theory of climate change is this recurring natural disaster of a Noaic event.
Right. Noah's flood was a specific instance of one of these natural disasters.
That's why Dr. Aardsma named them Noaic events, because of Noah's flood, which is recorded for us as an eyewitness account.
The idea is they pose a huge threat to living things, causing massive loss of life all over the globe. They involve much more, which is detrimental to life, than just massive flooding alone.
But it is the massive flooding, which is tied in with the temperature fluctuations in the history of our planet and what we are calling climate change.
Many listening may not realize this, and I didn't realize it till recently. Our planet shows patterns of warming and cooling over hundreds of thousands of years. Why? then? Is that the case?
If you look in the research article at figure 3, and I believe we also have this in the show notes, there is a graph of Earth's average annual temperature going back 420,000 years. And this data was obtained from ice cores in Antarctica at Vostok, Antarctica, by drilling down into these glaciers and getting data from there, which has also been corroborated by other labs in other locations and other glaciers.
Now, let me mention this. We don't have time to get into everything in this podcast. You may be saying hundreds of thousands of years. I thought the Earth was just created 7,000 years ago. We talk about what we are calling virtual history. That is dealt with on other podcasts. You can go back and listen to those podcasts. You can look it up. Do your own research in the articles there by Dr. Aardsma. Virtual history and that understanding as to the backstory of God's creation and how we can have a history in a world that was created approximately 7,000 years ago, a history that goes way far back beyond the date of creation.
We take all of this data going as far back as can be obtained as valuable information about our planet and how it works.
Right.
And graciously, God allows us to get this information so we can understand the globe that we're living on. Created things have a history. That's the nature of something that's created. We've talked about this extensively before.
Right.
So to the scientist friends listening, we do not discount or toss out any of this data. Anything about the history of the Earth going back as far back as we can, we take it as valid, valuable information. So that's what we're looking at here.
What we also see in this virtual history for our theology friends is a fallen virtual history. When the fall took place, it affected all of God's creation, including what we see back way in the past. And that's what we're dealing with today.
These ice cores were drilled into Antarctica at a depth of 2 miles.
Right.
And what we can see by this temperature data is that Earth's climate is definitely a bit of a contentious beast. It has not stayed steady through these hundred thousands of years of Earth's history. There are peaks and there are low points and many variations in between.
You can go to our show notes. There's a graph right there. It's also in Dr. Aardsma's article where it is showing this temperature change throughout history.
We can see there are 5 peaks, 5 warming spikes that are evident over the past 450,000 years, each separated by roughly 100,000 years. Lots of variations in between. What's causing this? I mean, is this just, you know, a natural cycle of the Earth, which of course is the other side of the climate change debate today? Some say it's caused by human activity, which we disagree with. Some say it's just a natural cycle. The Earth just wants to do this,
right?
Which we also don't really agree with, because there's a specific cause behind the warming and cooling trends. And that's what we're here to talk about. You know, even natural cycles have a cause. I mean, somebody could say, well, it's just a natural cycle. It's light for 12 hours and it's dark for 12 hours. That's just a natural cycle. Well, we know through advancements in science what's causing that natural cycle.
Right. So in a nutshell, what we have here is a question of cause and effect. We can all see the effect. Temperatures are rising. The climate is changing. Okay, what is the cause? What is causing this to happen? Mainstream science says that it's human activity. We have to cut down on the human activity, the CO2 levels that are causing the globe to warm and that are causing the glaciers to melt back.
We have to put up windmills. We have to get electric cars. We have
solar power.
Use solar panels and wind, solar, tide. You know, I remember that being talked about way back when I was in high school and stuff. Trying to cut down the human activity. This actually, now hang with us here, the current mainstream theory of climate change is very poor. It is the best thing that's going, and that's why it's accepted, but a much better theory is now on the scene.
Right.
And it has very frightening implications. But the theory of Milankovitch cycles and CO2 really does not explain the warming and cooling trends of the history of our planet.
In the past, right. How did it, okay, you can say that for what's going on today, but what about that pattern over hundreds of thousands of years? It doesn't give a good explanation for that.
Right.
And just because a theory is considered mainstream science, should we automatically take that as truth? Well, no, we shouldn't. Should we automatically assume that if the things being presented are, quote, mainstream science, that it's even on a quest for the truth? Dr. Aardsma makes this statement, quote, mainstream science is as rife today with its own peculiar fads and prejudices as it has always been in the past. Okay, we have to get over those preconceived ideas, no matter what side of the table you're on, and listen to a brand new theory.
So the globe is warming and the glaciers are melting back, the polar ice caps, right? You can watch animations of how much they've shrunk in recent years. It's normally thought that the rising temperatures are causing the glaciers to melt. Now we're going to flip this on its head. In actuality, the melting glaciers are causing Earth's temperature to rise.
Let me just stress what you just said, because this is such an important point. Normally, it is thought that rising temperatures are causing the glaciers to melt. That's what we all naturally think. We are going to present that, in fact, the melting glaciers are causing the temperatures to rise. That's what's causing the global warming.
I think that's pretty easy to understand. The less ice you have covering the globe, the warmer the land area is going to be. If ice is melting back on land, then that land can warm up more from the sun. So if you're following us here, if you've tracked with us this far, the natural question in your mind is going to be, well, then what is causing the glaciers to melt? If it's not human activity, that's warming everything up, melting back these glaciers and causing the oceans to rise. What's causing the glaciers to melt?
Well, this is where we get into our Bible science. An event took place 5,500 years ago, approximately, that began the long process. Again, now we have to, as we said at the beginning, step way back and think in terms of millennia. This event began the long process of melting back our glaciers, our ice caps. What was that event? It is what we call Noah's flood. It is what we are calling, in this theory, a Noahic event. That event that truly took place in this real world began this cause of melting back the ice caps, melting back the glaciers. And it's been a slow process of warming up until our day.
Yes. Well, let me restate that. It began a process that pretty much leveled out the temperatures
right.
for a long time. And the way it works when glaciers are thinned by melting due to flooding, you can picture this, flood waters coming in on top of glaciers of ice, enormous glaciers of ice. This thins the glaciers. It can thin them from the top and also from the bottom. Thick enough glaciers will actually break free of their beds and will be melted also from the underside by the floodwaters. All of this results in thinning of the glaciers. This stops the glaciers in their tracks of normal growth and eventually causes them to shrink, actually. And all of this is explained in detail in the article and the science behind it. As they shrink, more land area is exposed. And of course, that land can then begin to warm up from the sun. So what you have is a process of thinning the glaciers, eventually shrinking the glaciers over thousands of years. It's a delayed effect. And then the warming of the globe. And so what we're seeing today is actually kind of an echo effect or a delayed effect from this real world event from 5,500 years ago.
So the answer to today's global warming climate change is Noah's flood. You may be listening and thinking, oh, come on, please hear us out. We are calling it a Noahic event for a reason. The pattern of climate change and fluctuation of global temperatures, the effect, are pointing to a much greater problem than we previously knew. The main issue that we are dealing with present climate change, is not the effect. It is the cause. What caused it?
Pretty much everybody listening probably at this point is saying, what are you saying, Noahic events? Okay, if you believe in Noah's flood, why wouldn't you just say Noah's flood?
The flood.
I mean, this thing that happened one time, right? We're going to explain to you what a Noahic event is. And this is based upon the biblical narrative of Noah's flood being investigated scientifically with all of the tools we have available to us today, and a very robust theory of Noah's flood that has been developed as far as how did it actually happen in the earth. Many people don't believe the biblical story of Noah's flood because it doesn't seem scientifically defensible. Well, that is a thing of the past. A book was published in 2015 by Dr. Aardsma. Noah's flood happened 3520 BC, and nobody can any longer say that Noah's flood is not scientifically defensible. He shows how it happened in the physics of the earth, and that is what a Noahic event is, which you're probably tracking with us and understanding that we're saying this was not a one-time event in Earth's history. So hang with us here.
Right. So let's give a brief rundown of what a Noahic event is, what took place in Noah's flood. And as Jennifer said, I encourage you to go get that book, Noah's Flood Happened 3520 BC, if you want the whole picture. Today we only have time to give a brief rundown of what is going on so that we can have a more clear understanding of the cause of global warming.
The Genesis narrative gives us an eyewitness account of waters flowing in at a certain place on the globe, and we know where that place was, rising, other scientific observations like rain for 40 days, waters going down, the highest mountains being covered before the waters went down, and then the waters receding and a wind rushing over. How do we explain all of this? I mean, is this just a fantastical fairy tale? Is this just God doing miracle after miracle after miracle in the earth? Or is this explainable by a physical process in the geophysics of the earth?
So let's get into that, the science. What is the heart of the matter here? Okay, a rigorous Bible science methodology tells us this. The fundamental thing which is wrong with mainstream theory today of climate change that is presented, is that it fails to take into account this fact. This will blow your mind. Earth's solid inner core is in no way fixed to its normal central position. The inner core can and has in the past been displaced from center. That is something that has got to be understood in science. And once it's understood, many questions are answered. Questions we've had for a very long time in science. This can only be learned by taking a high view of the data presented to us in the biblical account of Noah's flood. According to what we are learning from the biblical historical record of Noah's flood, scientifically, is that Earth's inner core was dislocated from center to the mantle at the time of the flood.
You may know from science class that the Earth's inner core is surrounded by fluid. And so if you have something solid inside a fluid, it can move around. There is nothing restraining it. Now, normally, Earth's inner core is subjected to equal pressures in all directions, and that holds it in the center, which is what is our center of gravity, actually, here in the Earth. But realizing that there are no struts connected up to the mantle from the inner core, as is known in physics, there's nothing fixing it there, then that's really the first part of understanding an egoic event. The second part is understanding that the inner core, therefore, can be displaced by a right. suitable perturbing force, which causes an imbalance of the pressure on the inner core.
A trigger event, something that takes place to move, to push that center core of the Earth out of its place.
In this case, what we're talking about as a trigger event are certain volcanoes,
according
volcanic
to this theory.
Right. hotspots around the globe. Reading a couple statements from page 12 of the article, the basic idea of trigger volcanoes are clear enough. They are fundamentally a means by which helium or argon gas originating in the core is vented from the core mantle boundary where it is otherwise trapped. The trigger volcano pipe will plug after the volcano has erupted. This is me paraphrasing. And then it plugs for thousands of years until it erupts again. Now, when it's erupting, as we're talking about this trigger event, the volcano functions essentially as a rocket engine, accelerating the Earth in space. And this acceleration produces a transient toroidal circulation of fluid in the outer core, sufficient to nudge the inner core off center. And core collapse inevitably follows. So that brings us to step three of a noaic event.
Right. So what you just read, it causes Earth's core to be forcibly ejected from the center, ultimately to collide with the underside of the mantle. And this can happen in any direction. And if you're listening and you know anything about what's called antipodal hotspots, this is an understanding now of what has caused that in the Earth.
After the core collides with the underside of the mantle, or as it is being drawn up and colliding, the center of gravity is necessarily shifting substantially. If the Earth's core, which is normally our center of gravity, is moving, what's going to happen to things like water and air?
Anything not attached
to the ground, not fixed in place, which is definitely oceans of water and our atmosphere,
right,
is going to follow the movement of the core.
And this is what took place in Noah's flood that we have the description of in the Bible. Iceland was the
location of the core colliding with the mantle,
right,
which is an antipodal hotspot today. And it's the Baleny Islands on the opposite side of the globe, which were the trigger event where there's volcanic activity there.
And so you have the waters of the southern hemisphere coming up into the northern hemisphere,
flowing up into the north, following the movement of the core and heaping up water for miles on that side of the globe. We've covered this on other podcasts. We've made a video about it on the BC Messenger YouTube channel. This is the physics of Noah's flood, and this is the physics of a noaic event.
Right. And again, as we mentioned, this leaves a signature on the Earth. We call them antipodal hotspots. They're situated on opposite sides of the Earth from each other. A straight line passing through the center of the Earth would connect the two. One end is a trigger event. The other end is where the core collides with the underside of the mantle. And these places always seem to have the potential to have volcanic activity.
They are a mystery to modern geophysics, but not any longer once you understand a noaic event. They're a mystery as to why we have these antipodal spots. Commonly known, this is kind of interesting, of general interest, commonly known places on the globe that are antipodal hotspots include the Hawaiian Islands,
right,
the Galapagos Islands,
Yellowstone, National Park.
Yellowstone.
Here in America.
And Iceland, as we already mentioned. And there are many, many more. And so where does that lead us?
Well, then the core. What happens to the core? It finally returns to its normal central location slowly. You say, how long does that take? It's all given to us in the Bible account of the flood. Noah recorded the events. He recorded the time it took for certain things to happen. And all of that's explained in Dr. Arzen's book on the flood.
The shifting of the atmosphere that happens is why we read about 40 days of rain and why we read about a rushing wind as the core went back down, as the flood receded. We won't get into that. We have other content on that. But that is the basics of a Noahic event.
And like we said, it explains antipodal hotspots, this mystery of modern physics. But that's not the only mystery that this theory is now explaining. Astoundingly, it explains numerous other...
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is like the most shocking part of this whole article on this new theory of climate change is that there are many long-held mysteries of modern geophysics that are solved by understanding that a Noahic event can happen in this Earth, in our globe, in our planet.
Well, let's just name them very quickly.
The mysteries that are solved.
The mysteries. Again, we have the antipodal hotspots. There's the mystery of the origin of Earth's magnetic field. I didn't know a lot of this until I began researching myself and studying for this podcast. It was Einstein himself
who said the greatest unsolved mystery.
Yeah.
Why does Earth's magnetic field over millennia, multiple thousands of millennia, occasionally switch from north to south?
And this is the answer. According to this theory, it is due to what we are terming a Noahic event, the Earth's core.
There are other mysteries, and hopefully future podcasts will delve into plate tectonics, the origin of the moon.
Origin of the moon.
but we're not here to talk about those things today, but it makes too much sense to just gloss over the fact that, you know, these are unanswered questions that lo and behold, a rigorous scientific understanding of this ancient biblical text is bringing us to solve these mysteries. But we need to move on and we need to continue to further connect the dots with this new climate change theory of Noahic events.
Right. So let's bring in climate change. What does all this have to do with climate change? This theory of Noah's flood, how does it answer that question? And it does. How climate change actually happens. We are presenting to you today the Noahic events theory of climate change.
We are saying that the event of Noah's flood that happened 3520 BC is the most recent Noahic event. When a Noahic event happens, and the trigger can be anywhere on the globe, the collision under the mantle can be anywhere on the globe, then specifically where the hot spots are, we believe is where past in virtual history, these events where the core has collided in the past, it brings a whole bunch of water over that section of the globe.
Right.
All the oceans are pulled in that direction. And if that section of the globe is glaciated, there is going to be a reaction to that inundation of water for that period of time. So there we are back at the Titanic struggle between Earth's glaciers and Earth's Noahic events, tying it back in where we started there. And so let's go on further to explain the main points of the Noahic events theory of climate change.
Right. I'm going to read from page 8 of Dr. Arzen's article, volume 14, number 5, and we're going to give the gist of this theory. Number one, Earth's average annual temperature is predominantly controlled by its reflectivity. The word for that apparently is albedo. It's albedo, it's reflectivity. Okay, we understand that. The average annual temperature controlled by its reflectivity. Number two, Earth's average annual reflectivity is predominantly controlled by the amount of surface area that's covered by its polar and alpine glaciers. This isn't hard to understand.
If you have glaciers miles thick, even covering your land area, it's not going to be able to warm up. It's going to reflect that sunlight back out into space. And you may not know this, you may, 22,000 years ago was the last glaciation. 22,000 years ago was when most of North America was covered by glaciers. A whole bunch of the globe at that point was glaciated.
So the more globe that you have covered by ice, the more reflection that you have, the cooler the planet is.
Right. And 22,000 years ago, the globe was much cooler than it is today.
Right. Okay. Number three, the equilibrium state for the Sun-Earth system, given the present land area configuration, is large glaciers and cool temperatures.
Equilibrium state as in what does it naturally want to do? What does our planet, what is it trying to do as a planet? It is trying to cool down. It wants to cool down. The glaciers want to grow. That's what's naturally going to happen.
So then, number four, the final one under this theory of climate change, noaic events, we've already described, disrupt the growth of the glaciers toward this equilibrium state by melting the glaciers back, causing delayed episodic global warming.
Depending where the noaic event happens, it's going to cover a greater or lesser extent of glaciers, or maybe no glaciers. And when you get the right combination of noaic events covering the glaciated areas of the globe, like from 22,000 years ago until now, it melts the glaciers, begins that process, thins the glaciers actually, and then begins to shrink the glaciers eventually. And then if another noaic event happens and hits another section of the glaciers, it's going to do more of the same. And then you end up with like just the polar ice caps like we have had for the last thousands of years. And then the northern polar glaciers were covered over by the floodwaters at the time of Noah's flood 5,500 years ago. And as a consequence of that noaic event, even that polar ice cap is now beginning to shrink. First was thinned and now is shrinking and causing further warming on the globe.
And let me state what we stated earlier again. Now having this information, this theory is showing us that present global warming is not causing the glaciers to melt, okay? That is not the cause. The great cause, the main cause that's causing the glaciers to melt is not CO2, carbon dioxide, human-caused. It rather is the last noaic event, what we call Noah's flood, after a predictable delay. That is causing the present recession of glaciers, reducing Earth's reflectivity, and thereby that is the cause for present global warming.
Milankovitch cycles are not the cause, and human activity, CO2, plays but a minor role in this new theory of climate change. So there you have it. I hope the dots are connecting for you mentally as you're listening to this. You're understanding what our globe can do in a noaic event, the impact that that has on Earth's glaciers or can have on Earth's glaciers, and the impact that that has on Earth's temperature over many thousands of years.
So we see the pattern. We now have an understanding of this theory, the theory of noaic events happening that is affecting Earth's temperature. We have given all of this to you today in a nutshell, a simple overview of this really quite complicated discovery. There's a lot of information, but today on the podcast, we just wanted to give you the gist of this discovery as simply as we could possibly make it. Again, the heart of the matter is we understand through this discovery that Earth's inner core is movable. It is not strutted in place. It is movable.
So according to this theory, this is what the Earth does. And this is how it works in geophysics. This is why we had Noah's flood. Just like the pattern of day and night, the Earth is prone to these events. It's also prone to icing over. And so there's this titanic struggle. So the natural question to ask would be, is this horrific thing going to happen again?
We see this pattern throughout history. What's up to keep us from saying it's not going to happen again in our world?
We know when the last one was because we have the record of it in Genesis and the eyewitness account. Now, let's just leave that question on the table. Is this horrific thing going to happen again?
And let's leave it on the table without theology for a minute.
Just hang on to your theology, because I can almost hear the loud and angry voices coming back across the miles, and I don't blame you. So hang on. Leave it on the table and just consider, if such a thing were to happen again, it would be absolutely devastating to our world today, to our civilization, just like it was in Noah's day. The whole world had to start over when they came off the ark, and they were quite advanced. We know from archaeology, the civilizations that were wiped out were beautifully advanced civilizations. That's what we have, a beautifully advanced civilization. That would not help us in the face of such a horrendous natural disaster happening to our world, the center of gravity shifting inside our planet, and all of the water and all of the air being pulled over to one side of the globe and the other side being without atmosphere and without oceans. I can hardly talk about that because it makes me feel a little bit panicked just considering such a thing. You know, you've got guys like Elon Musk. They want us to become an interplanetary civilization because he's worried about things like giant asteroids hitting the Earth and all of civilization being wiped out. So he wants at least some people to be on other planets that wouldn't be wiped out if such a thing happened. But how do you save an entire civilization? Billions of people. Even if you do put some people on other planets, we're a long, long way from putting the whole population there. It's a horrific thought. So, I mean, what's the answer to that question? Is this going to happen again?
From the science side of things, the answer is quite confidently, it could most certainly happen again. And it certainly looks like if the pattern continues from what we see again in the science, it's going to. And so that does cause alarm. This is what we mean about mainstream science on this issue also being dangerous. It's dangerous, the message we're getting today, because it's not dealing with the real issue. Putting up the windmills, making emissions policies, all of that, you know, trying to do something to stop this effect that's going on is not dealing with the real issue. It's not going to stop the pattern of Earth's Noahic events. Again, speaking from the science side of things, that is certainly what we are looking at with this theory.
So all of the scientists and brilliant minds listening, this is why we want you to pay attention to this new theory. Because mankind routinely addresses threats to our world. And so this appears to be a very real threat. Now, we know this is where we really hit a wall theologically.
That's right, because we have Genesis 8. And again, we take what the Bible says seriously. That's we have a very high view of the Bible and the science. And so when we look at it through the lens of Scripture, we have what appears to be a very clear promise from God saying he will not allow this sort of Noahic event to happen again on the earth. And so the question is, do we believe the promises of God?
In light of everything we just said, all of the Bible believers need to be standing up in righteous indignation and saying, do you not believe the promises of God?
Right.
If you know your Bible, you know Noah and his family were scared to death to come off the ark. They finally did come off. God put the rainbow in the sky. God made a covenant with Noah, with the animals. I will not do this again.
Well, and what we have here is a conundrum. And we often see this with science, God's world, and the Bible, God's word. But they come together at some point. That is also what we see. And that is what we are dealing with a lot here in this work that we're presenting. A great example of this is millions of years, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. How can that come together with when the Bible very clearly shows that the earth was created approximately 7,000 years ago? Well, we do have answers to this now that we are looking at, and we're still figuring all of these things out, but here we have another one. Both of these things, we believe, come from God and can be seen as true. How is that even possible? Well, the truth is, we don't know yet. We don't have a complete understanding of it.
I mean, can you imagine that? We have found ourselves at a place where God's promised something and then something comes along that seems to make absolutely no sense. This is probably the first time in the history of the entire world this has ever happened to somebody, right?
I often think of, and I think I've said this in a number of our podcasts, I often think of the cross of Christ. I mean, here's the Messiah is going to come. We believe that the anointed one, he's going to save the world. I mean, and yet, the cross, who would have thought? This seems to be how God always works. So we see it again. And we don't have to be so shocked that this is what we're seeing.
We don't have to react in a fit of righteous indignation and bad, bad, bad science, bad, bad theory, and believe God, the end. No, we don't. We need to be honest on all sides. And yes, we believe God's promises.
Right.
But we must understand and acknowledge that God's promises so often entail a human side.
Right.
And that's a mystery. I mean, who can explain, you know, God's sovereignty and man's free will and how these things interact?
So this is one very important way to look at it, is what you're saying, that often it entails a human element, especially after Christ. Christ has come and the people of God are to be the hands and the feet of Jesus in the world. We have this dominion mandate that we've been given.
Even from the science side alone, we are not hopeless in this and just waiting for the next Noahic event because mankind has been commissioned to take dominion. And in fact, man is very good at solving the problems. And so it very well could be that in this case, God has revealed this information so that mankind can take a hold of it and take dominion and subdue the earth from this type of natural disaster. And in that, God's promise is fulfilled. I will not do this again. God didn't say you will never face a threat of it again. And that seems to be kind of where we're finding ourselves. But we can look to him with eyes of faith. Now, we can't just sit on the beach and say God's going to save us from any future Noahic events while we just
ignore the truth, the data that's sitting in front of us.
I mean, think about the children of Israel taking the promised land. We know God promised it to Abraham. And then hundreds of years later, he fulfilled his promise. All through that story, you see the interplay of the human and the divine. But Moses didn't just lay around in his tent and wait for God to lead the children of Israel into the promised land like he had promised. I mean, Moses had a huge role to play. And so did all the men of Israel as they had to suffer hardships, and the women and the children too. But there was a human role in God fulfilling his promise to Abraham so long before that time. And so we have to keep that in mind. It does not cast doubt on the promises of God to say, what is our part in this grand story?
Right. And that's why we're talking about it on this podcast. We all have to do our part. The information must go out. We cannot ignore anything that looks to be truth, even if it's not agreeing with our preconceived ideas. That would be extremely foolish, very dangerous. and not as a human ever fully understanding the sovereignty of God, the free will of man, all of these kind of things. Regardless of that, we have truth in front of us. Here it is. What is God going to do? We can't fully understand it. We certainly believe the promises of God, and yet we also see this data sitting right here in front of us.
So that's why we're on here talking about it to you, because we all have to do our part. And that's the role that God's given to us. We're not trying to scare you half to death, but most likely God's allowed you to hear this information because you have a role to play in how this is all going to unfold as well. We cannot take our role in subduing the earth in this situation if the information does not go out.
Right.
It must begin to go out. And, you know, there should be other great scientific minds who want to weigh in on all of this and add more to the equation and maybe even falsify parts of the theory and bring some other things to light. We are ready and waiting for that kind of thing. But if the information doesn't go out and people aren't made aware of it, that'll never happen. So as we take our role, we hope and pray you'll take your role. And that goes on mushrooms out to those who really hold powerful positions today in government, in science, in setting the climate change policies that we have.
Now, some listening to the podcast may think, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. What's my role in this? I'm not a scientist. I'm just a, average Joe. Well, the main thing that needs to be done at this point is to get the information out, spread the word, let other people know about this podcast or this newsletter Dr. Arzman has written, and help us just simply spread the word of what's going on here.
Maybe you know somebody who has a platform, another podcast, an audience somewhere on social media, or somehow they have people who listen to them. Maybe you could get a hold of that individual and say, here's some information you could put out. Just ask the Lord, what role can I play? He will show you.
Those who are in the government, those who have positions of power with national, international climate change policies, those folks must take this information seriously. They need to get the information first. And when they get it, they must take it seriously and begin to direct resources toward this potential, what looks to be true, problem. This discovery needs to be taken very seriously. The most brilliant minds in our world need to consider the information that is being given here and begin to address it.
It's not an unsolvable problem. As a layperson, when I first began to understand this theory, as Dr. Arzman was first publishing it and we were talking about it, I mean, my reaction was, what could we ever do about eruptions coming from the inner core of the earth through the mantle? Mankind has met its match. But the scientific minds out there know that we actually do have things that can be done. And Dr. Arzma began to talk about what his thoughts were on how, as a global community, we would begin to address this issue. So we need to look at it in a hopeful way. We know where our eyes are.
Know where our faith is.
We know where our faith is.
Right.
We know the promises of God.
Even when they don't seem to make sense.
Right.
We know the promise. We believe it. But we don't toss out the promise, and we don't toss out God's science that's right in front of us as well. Well, this has been, as you can see, a very different sort of episode, our special edition. We have given a lot of information here, and I hope that it's been as clear as possible. Jennifer and I have spent quite a bit of time in trying to figure out how do you give this much information in one podcast episode. There's a lot of questions we haven't answered. I can imagine some may be thinking, well, if you think one of these are going to happen again, I mean, how far are we talking? I mean, are they going to happen again real soon? Or we got 100,000 years left? Listen, there's all this information. You can read Dr. Arzma's article. We don't have time to get into all the details. I will mention this on that question. The answer to that is we just have no idea. So again, there's a lot of questions, a lot of things to discuss. But ultimately, and we'll close this out today, our help is in, as Psalm 124, verse 8 says, our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. We acknowledge that, and we believe that.
I have that verse on my window ledge right now above my kitchen sink. Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth.
He holds the future in his hands. He does. Next month, we are going to plan to get back to our regular content of delving into more cutting-edge research at the interface of science and the Bible as we carry on presenting you with information from this Bible science research here of Dr. Gerald Ardsma. And we continue to bring you more vital truth about our world that you're going to hear here and not anywhere else.
Thank you for hanging on for the ride through this episode. And hey, go to thebcmessenger.com. Leave us a voice message. Maybe you strongly disagree. Maybe you have questions. Maybe you have some light bulbs of your own with this new theory. Whatever it is, we would love to hear from you, as always. And join us in seeking help from the name of the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth.
Yes, we'd love to hear from you. We will see you next month in November.